And joining me by telephone from North Carolina is journalist Barry Yeoman, who is well known to many people in our listening area for a number of reasons. Many of our listeners remember that back in the early to mid-80s, Barry, you worked for the original Times, the Times of Acadiana. It was actually probably your first job out of college, I think.
It was.
Yeah, your baptism. And so you worked there until 86, I believe, and then headed to North Carolina, where you're still based now.
I moved to Durham, North Carolina, mm-hmm. in 1986, mm-hmm. and hard to believe it's been as long as it has, but here I am still.
Well, you've been extremely busy since you took that step, and you've been a freelance journalist and documentarian since then. I know that some people have heard your documentaries, your radio documentaries, Still Singing the Blues, which was about older blues and R&B musicians, both here in South Louisiana and New Orleans. And then you did a documentary on Zydeco Nation, about Creoles who had moved out to the West Coast. So people really enjoyed those pieces. And then, of course, during the oil spill, you and Richard Ziegler did this amazing series of journalistic pieces on the oil spill and some really interesting topics that KRVS kind of initiated. It was through an LPB grant from CPB, and you covered an amazing range of topics, people who had been affected by the oil spill. And I know those were consistently some of those popular pieces published on that site. So I know our listeners enjoyed those as well. You have, and again, you started off as a print journalist, you've gone into radio documentaries, and now you've gone into the brave new world of multi-platform journalism. And that is a buzzword. We all use that now, multi-platformed. We're trying to get the eyes and ears of our readers, our listeners, wherever they are. And so tell us just a bit about why you became interested in that form. And there are some interesting websites that are, again, foraying into that area.
Sure. Well, having been raised in very old-school print journalism, I never really thought that I would become a radio journalist until I had a chance to work on a joint print and radio project about the impact of older Louisianans after Hurricane Katrina. And I realized how much I loved sound. Mm-hmm. As somebody who was taught print, I didn't really appreciate how beautiful it was to mix together voices and background sounds and music for transitions and all this stuff. And it really sort of awakened the sense that you can tell stories in multiple ways.
Mm-hmm.
And just over the last 2 or 3 years, there's been a big push to fuse storytelling, to build websites where you tell a story with a combination of print and audio and video and maybe interactive maps, and you might have archival photos and have archival documents. And that way, the reader and listener has a really immersive experience where they can access the main story through reading it, but then they can hear people's voices and they can see old photos and maybe there's a particularly important video clip. And it makes the whole experience of learning about a subject, hearing about a life, more all-consuming.
Well, I can tell you this piece was all-consuming. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I want to let our listeners know that this piece is called The Gut Bucket King that we're going to be talking about, and it is about, it's a profile of little Freddie King. We're all very familiar with him. He comes to Lafayette often to play for the Black Pot Festival, but he lives in New Orleans, and he's one of the last country bluesmen still performing there. So you thought his life would be particularly appropriate for this kind of multi-platformed story. But let's go back just a bit and talk about your love for these musicians. Again, you left Louisiana a long time ago, but you have retained it. Obviously had an effect on you, and the music had an effect. So tell us about that love for the music.
Well, I moved to South Louisiana in 1982, and was 22 years old, and it really was KRVS which got me listening to something beyond the top 40 radio of my childhood. And as I listened to wonderful Cajun and Zydeco music and spent Wednesday nights at Mulots and met a lot of VA musicians, I realized what an amazing musical culture South Louisiana had. But I was really focused on French music, Cajun, Creole, Zydeco music, and didn't have a full sense of how expansive Louisiana music was. And then in 2008, so fast forwarding two decades, I was working on a travel story about New Orleans, and I was sitting at a bar where there was a not very well-known blues singer singing, and in walks Little Freddie King for the second set. And he was sitting in, and he picked up his guitar, and I swear, Judith, the light in the room changed. Everything changed. It sparkled, it exploded. And I knew nothing about his story, but I knew just from how he played his guitar that this was a story worth telling. And long story short, Richard Ziegler and I received a grant from the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities to produce Still Singing the Blues, which was an hour-long radio documentary. KRVS was instrumental in helping us get that grant. And we got to tell the story of three musicians, including Carol Fran of Lafayette, Harvey Knox of Baton Rouge, and Little Freddie. And Freddie got 19 minutes of airtime, which was great, but it was not enough to tell a story. This is a man who has survived being shot and stabbed by his own wife. He was part of the great migration of Southern blacks out of the most oppressive parts of the rural South. His life, his music, really tell the story of the Deep South in the 20th century. And so when the publisher of the New South came to me and said, would you like to write something for us? I didn't have to think about it more than about 12 hours, and I literally sprung up in bed in the middle of the night, and I said, I want to tell Little Freddie's story in a lot more depth. And because we had a multimedia platform, had the chance to tell a story not just with text, but with audio, hear his voice telling his story, hear his music, hear him explain songs and then play them in his living room. And because we had all these beautiful field recordings from the radio documentary, it just seemed like a perfect fit.
And some amazing photographs and maps, and it's just an incredibly rich way to tell a story. Now, you mentioned, Barry, the New South. Tell us about that publication.
Sure. New South, which you can access along with the story at newnewsouth.com, is a new startup online magazine of long-form multimedia journalism about the South. And unpacking that phrase, what that means is that they tell stories at more length than you would see in a normal newspaper or magazine story. It's longer than a magazine story, it's shorter than a book, and it's told with both text and multimedia. And this is just the second story New South is publishing. So we are part of a slowly growing movement to take the gamble that readers are willing to pay a small amount of money, in this case $4, for a really immersive experience. And New South has specifically made the commitment to hire very good writers to produce these multimedia stories that address a whole range of Southern themes. So their first story was actually about the forced sterilization program in North Carolina, which ran through much of the 20th century. So you can see that it's a really wide range of subject matters.
Yeah, they're not shy about subject matter.
No. And the great thing about having the length I have, this was a 13,000-word story, and a long magazine story is maybe 4,000 words, is that I was not just telling Little Freddy's story, although it's told in great length, but also I could put him in the context of race and migration in the South in the 20th century. And so it's not just that he hopped on a freight train in Macomb, Mississippi, and headed south. It's also the story of Macomb, Mississippi in the 1950s and 60s. Why did people leave? Why did so many musicians head from Mississippi to Louisiana, while others, of course, were heading north to Memphis and Chicago? I had the chance to tell that story in a much richer, broader way because I had so much room.
I want to tell, before we continue talking about this story, I want to let our listeners know who are just tuning in. My guest by telephone from North Carolina is journalist Barry Yeoman, whose latest project publication is called The Gut Bucket King. It's a long-form multimedia profile of Little Freddie King from New Orleans and has just been published by The New New South, a digital magazine of long-form journalism. And Barry, what you're talking about is really kind of flying in the face of what is out there right now, people complaining that the written form online is becoming shorter and shorter. There's texting, there are little sound bites, there's quick flashes of images. This seems to be going, in a way, somehow into the future and yet reaching back to that long-form journalism that many of us who, you know, read magazines like the New Yorker and The Atlantic for years love. This is kind of an interesting, you know, look to the future and look to the past as well.
Yeah, I think we have these two competing cross currents in our culture. On one hand, we have publications like BuzzFeed, which specialize in listicles, you know, the 15 most drunken photos of the British royal family, or 36 cute cats who you want to own, and those just populate Facebook and Twitter like you wouldn't believe, of course, and you have pressure from newspapers to write shorter and shorter stories and have more and more of them. But there's also this other current happening, and it's really exciting for those of us who love in-depth storytelling, and that is you have publications like the New New South, like The Atavist, which has really championed the long-form multimedia platform. You have websites that are curating long-form journalism, like longreads.com, and people have shown a willingness to actually sit down and read stories that are longer than what they would find in a newspaper. I actually think this is a really hopeful time, and a lot of this has been championed by radio. I mean, think of This American Life, think of Radiolab. Just in the last few years, those radio programs have had hour-long shows on one topic. It used to be that if you had a documentary radio program, you might have 10 minutes on this, 15 minutes on that, but people have shown a real hunger for longer, more comprehensive stories.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel also that, I guess, a long-form piece, if you're sitting at your office, in front of your computer, it may be a little more difficult to read a 13,000-piece article, whereas now with the pads and Kindles and all those other very transportable means to read, we can take those pieces with us more easily anywhere.
Sure.
Do you feel that has helped the long-form journalism?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are reading these stories while they're on the treadmill of the gym, if they take a bus to work, for example, they can have an iPad and read it.
Mm-hmm.
We are a more mobile culture, and because of that, we're not locked to the desk that we don't really want to be at if we're not working, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I think that it allows us a whole lot more flexibility, and I think also an awful lot of people are just tired of how fast their lives are, how they're having to respond to this text and that tweet and having to multitask. And long form does, I think, give people a chance to go back to an earlier time. And even though it's a new technology, they might be reading it in multiple media on a tablet, but still it is it's a long story, like the stories we told at campfires. It has a slowness of pace that serves as an antidote to the speed of our lives.
Right. And also, for journalists like yourself, who are such excellent writers, we long for that. I do miss that, you know, you call these listicles that are scattered everywhere across the web. You really hunger for that. Very in-depth, beautifully written, carefully designed pieces. And I think you're right. People are looking for that. But I guess along with that comes this other issue, which the music industry has been dealing with and seems to be more effectively finding solutions. And that's getting people to pay for it.
Yeah. And it's funny because here, again, I think we have cross currents. Mm-hmm. We have people who have their Kindles, and they get to the end of the book, and a screen pops up and says, if you like this, you'll probably like this. Mm-hmm. And you touch a screen, and it automatically bills you, no fuss, no muss, and you don't really think about it. And so people have been willing to do that. And on the other hand, there's been this trope in our culture about how information wants to be free. And so people resent paywalls, and they resent having to pay for things when they can get other things from the same medium for free. And so overcoming that is certainly the challenge of New South, of all of the publishers of really quality online journalism. We don't have ads. Mm-hmm. So we are again banking on the fact that, especially because this is really a small amount of money, that people are willing to support high-quality journalism with a small amount of money.
Mm-hmm. So how are they beginning to set these? I guess what is the draw? What, as you mentioned that, you know, on Kindle it pops up and everything's well taken care of. I assume that they're creating Atavis and the New South. You're having to create things that make it just as easy to pay and at the same time make these stories so attractive that you want to continue purchasing them.
Sure. So part of it is the latter for sure, making it attractive. And packaging is important. But in this case, it's more than packaging, because the thing that makes it attractive really is part of the medium. It's part of what makes it good journalism.
Right.
So we hired a really terrific photographer named Julia Dermansky, who lives in New Orleans and who has photographed Little Freddie King before, and she did some portraiture that just pops. And likewise, I spent a fair amount of my time in New Orleans tracking down archival photos and historic documents. And those are the types of things that most readers of a typical newspaper article won't have access to.
Mm-hmm.
So when we have Little Freddie talking about the day that his wife shot and stabbed him, we don't just have him telling the story. I found the police report,
mm-hmm.
and it's there in the site, and it pops up when you click on it.
Right.
And we have his wife's bail report. And So part of it is really promising readers, this is not just a good read, this is something new, and hoping that we've made the interface easy enough so that they can click on read now and enter a password and
mm-hmm.
and offer their credit card information, and it's relatively quick and no fuss. And
mm-hmm.
But again, this is sort of a new world, and so there's a lot of tweaking around the edges and making sure that this is really easy, this is really intuitive,
mm-hmm.
And we're not completely there yet, but I think we're definitely moving in the right direction.
And it's fascinating the level of quality, the quality of the experience that you have in this piece. Again, we're talking about The Gut Bucket King, a multimedia long-form profile of Little Freddie King by Barry Yeoman. as I was reading it, it struck me that I was looking at a high-quality book. The quality of the photographs, as you mentioned, the writing, the design. I guess what we would reserve for a quality that we would call coffee table, something that you want to open up because the photographs are so beautiful. The design is so lovely. And it has that quality. And to me, that is something that people would pay for to have in front of them.
Well, thank you. I have to say that even though we don't have sales figures yet, I can tell you that the people who have read it, and again, I should say, if you want to read it, it's accessible through newnewsouth.com, mm-hmm. have given us feedback like that. Mm-hmm. We've been told that people get to the end of the story and they feel sad because they're at the end of the
yes.
story. They want more.
Mm-hmm.
It's been such a rich experience, not just reading Freddie's story, but hearing his voice and hearing his music and seeing photos of him all through his life. People have just been really generous in their feedback, and it's very gratifying mm-hmm. to be part of a team of people, a really fine photographer, a really excellent audio recorder, a very committed publisher who have taken the time to make this look as beautiful as
you wanted it to be.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. It's like a combination of an incredibly high quality audio documentary and a high quality book, and you've got it all in this one package. And you really do want to immerse yourself in it and spend time with it and. Have that pad that you can carry anywhere with you and curl up with it and sort of lose yourself in this story that is so beautifully presented. Well, let's talk just a minute about the Gut Bucket King, this story so beautifully created by you. Why is it called the Gut Bucket King? What does that refer to?
So little Freddie King, he's called his blues the Gut Bucket Blues, mm-hmm. which is a reference to Louis Armstrong, who named a song of his Gut Bucket Blues after the literal buckets of guts that were on the floors of fish markets in Louisiana, meaning it was low down and dirty. And there's not a lot of this grimy, earthy blues that's played in New Orleans or any place in Louisiana. Most of the great migration of Southern African Americans, including Southern African American musicians, was north to places that became great blues cities, Memphis and Chicago. But a small group of Mississippi musicians migrated south instead of north because New Orleans had a more tolerant racial climate. It was still very much a Jim Crow city, but it was not as oppressive as Southwest Mississippi. And they formed this underground scene, this subterranean scene of blues musicians. And if you were African American and living in New Orleans in the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s, you knew where the house parties were, you knew where the corner bars in Treme or Shrewsbury were, and you knew which radio stations would play Mississippi blues. And so the scene emerged very much apart from the more popular jazz scene or the R&B scene. It was a much more private scene that people who visited New Orleans knew nothing about. And there are, in fact, still vestiges of it if you know where to look in New Orleans. But really, Little Freddie King is the last of the generation, or one of the last of the generation, of Mississippi bluesmen who migrated in the mid-20th century, played this deeply authentic Delta-inspired blues, and still plays it with the kind of uncut intensity that you might have heard in Southwest Mississippi in 1955.
Mm-hmm. Did he record much back then? How much of this blues was recorded in the 50s and 60s in New Orleans?
Very little. He made his first record in the early 70s. There was an earlier recording which was never released, and then he recorded with Harmonica Williams a record in 1971, I believe it was, and it's a collector's item. It's so much of a collector's item, I've never heard it. But those who have heard it say that it's wonderfully flawed. Mm-hmm. It sounds beautifully imperfect. It's intense, and it's scratchy, and it's a little warped, and it has a deeply authentic feel. And then he didn't record for a very long time, and truly has recorded more in the last dozen years than ever in his life. And I was struck, Judith, that as I was researching the story, that a lot of the musicians who were part of the same migration, people like Arzo Youngblood and Boogie Bill Webb, they didn't really record much either. Certainly there were some recordings, and it was very helpful for me to hear, but part of what ended up motivating me is that so many of these other musicians lived and died and didn't get their stories told, didn't really leave a lot of recordings, were hardly photographed. And here was a chance to honor somebody who keeps on playing this great music and is in many ways at 73 years old, at the height of his career, make sure that he really has a legacy and his story is really told.
Now, I think people may be wondering how they can access this story. You mentioned the New South. Do you just go to that site and there's a way to click on your story?
So there is a longer URL, but if you go to newnewsouth.com, there are instructions for how to access it. And I think that's the easiest way of doing it. Mm-hmm. Just it's newnewsouth, all one word, .com. There's a link to how to read The Gut Bucket King, and you actually have two options. If you really don't want to hear the music and don't want to see the pictures, although I couldn't understand why you would choose that, you can buy it as a Kindle single and just read the text on your Kindle. But for a dollar more, you get the full immersive experience, which you can read on your computer, on your iPad, on your smartphone, and you also have access to a file for your Kindle if you want to read that also.
So truly multi-platformed. No matter yes. where we are, what kind of device we have, it's available there. Now, you did mention the long documentary you did called Still Singing the Blues, which also has information about Little Freddie King. Some people may not have seen that or heard it on KRVS or some other platform. How can people access that? Is it possible to find yes. it?
Yes. We now have the entire thing online. It's at stillsingingtheblues.org. And if you click on listen, it's actually a two-hour radio documentary. The first hour is called Still Singing the Blues. The second hour is called Crescent City Blues. The first hour focuses on three musicians, Little Freddie King, Harvey Knox of Baton Rouge, and, of course, Carol Fran of Lafayette. And the second hour is more New Orleans-centric. It's about the little neighborhood bars in New Orleans mm-hmm. where the blues flourished and still do.
Mm-hmm. So that's available. Just go to stillsingingtheblues.org, and you can access that. If you are just tuning in, my guest by telephone from North Carolina is journalist Barry Yeoman, who again got his journalistic start here in Lafayette many, many years ago and has retained his passion for both the culture and the music and spends a lot of time on this passion amidst his other interests, which include social issues, political issues, and you're quite busy. So we're glad that you do turn your attention to these cultural music topics and characters. here in South Louisiana. Again, a brave new world of long-form multimedia platform journalism that we can find at newnewsouth.com. You also probably have information at your personal website about your work and something about this piece as well?
Yes. So my website is my name. It's barryyeoman.com. That's BarryYeoman.com.
Okay, and you can find out more about Barry's other work there and also some information and links to The Gut Bucket King, which has just been published by a new multi-platformed magazine called The New South. That's at newnewsouth.com. And Barry, again, we're so happy to have this relationship with you over the years for so many issues, and we hope that continues for a long time and that your passion for Louisiana continues bringing you back to the state. Anything else we should know about this particular piece? Anything that you're most pleased about?
I just am so happy that so many people in Little Freddie King's life shared their lives with me, from his sister talking about their spirit-filled Christian upbringing and how her brother Freddie was the one who had the greatest gift for seeing spirits, to his friend, the bluesman Guitar Lightning Lee, talking about the old days where he would come in his muddy construction boots and lie down on the floor with his feet sticking up in the air, and mud would rain down as he was playing his guitar. So many people told me amazing stories, and I'm just very, very grateful.
And not only can you read that story in Barry's beautiful prose, but you can also hear those voices of the people that he mentioned, all at that story, The Gut Bucket King, which is now available at newnewsouth.com. Well, Barry, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us about it. We all look forward to reading it and having it on our virtual coffee tables.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Judy.
Thank you, Barry.